When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ohio seniors, make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. Enroll by December 7th.
Hey, spit that out.
Hey everybody, welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Richard.
And I'm Chris.
This is House Podcastica. This week we're covering The Mandalorian Season 1, Episode 2, Chapter 2, The Child. And the first episode didn't have a title, but I think it's deliberate and they're going to add one later as an homage to Star Wars, A New Hope.
Oh, yeah. Good thinking.
Which is a lame title, in my opinion, for a great movie.
Now, listen, the title of this one, The Child, wasn't revealed anywhere except on screen, right? When you watched
That's when I learned about it. And then if you go on IMDb, next week's isn't on there. No title.
Yeah. I checked that source, and I checked, what is it called? ING or IGN, and they didn't have anything to do. It was just titled Chapter 2 last week or yesterday.
So it was when it was on screen, I think.
Yeah, I think that's what they're going to do. They're not revealing them until you watch it on Friday nights or Fridays when it's released.
But one didn't have one.
No, you're right.
Yet. So before we get into it, I thought it would be fun to start off each episode with a Star Wars question. So my question this week is, if you could have any object from Star Wars, what would it be?
Lightsaber.
Tell us how you really feel there, Rich.
I feel like Richard might have thought about this
already. Yeah, no, yeah.
Lightsabers
might
cool.
have happened in my dreams.
The problem with lightsaber is there's no way you wouldn't kill yourself with it. You
chop
wouldn't
your arm
or,
off.
Or chop your own leg off or something like that. There's no
my
way.
2-year-old would have killed us all by now. Because I have a replica of Luke's Return of the Jedi one, that because there's this whole community of people who build lightsaber replicas and they're not cheap. And I also have Luke's first one that Obi-Wan gave him, and they look just like it and it's awesome. But anyway, if you hand that to my kid, he's gonna break things and hit his brother. Mm-hmm. So imagine if it was real.
I know.
Right. You'd all be dead the first day. Like, as cool as lightsabers are, I see them as extremely dangerous.
They are. They're very destructive.
I would love to have the Millennium Falcon. I mean, is that allowed? It's gotta be my favorite ship in all of science fiction and fantasy. So,
that's saying something.
You know, I love Serenity and lots of other ones, but the Millennium Falcon is the one I grew up
pretty
with.
Pretty damn cool.
And, pretty cool, yeah.
It's fast.
Would you take us
and
for
it's
a
unique
ride?
Unique looking.
Of course.
All right.
Fly right over and pick you up.
It'll be like 2 seconds if you can get that hyperdrive working. I love lightsabers. I mean, I could pick the Death Star and then just have everything in it.
Yeah.
But I would either pick a lightsaber or maybe a speeder bike. That'd be pretty awesome.
You know,
a speeder bike
would be fun, but I must admit, I also have always kind of wanted like real stormtrooper armor, like in real life, because you can sort of get that, right? You can get really authentic, high quality stormtrooper armor. Mm-hmm. I would love to have a set of that stuff, you know, more than just for Halloween too.
But I mean, if you were ever in a firefight, apparently it would do you no good.
No, not at all. But you know,
right?
But it'd be cool. All right, cool. Okay, cool. Let's get into our top three highlights for this week's episode, The Mandalorian, Season 1, Episode 2, Chapter 2, The Child. What did you guys think in general? Well, I'm going to go first this week, if you don't mind.
Do it.
Because I, you know, as I'm sitting with the show, I realize I'm just more and more in love with it. And I regret not giving my A grade last week. And I'm just really immersed in it. And I love how it's taking its time with the moments. It's really a show about moments and ambiance and immersiveness and all that. And I think it's really well balanced too. It's a balance of cool and funniness and action and cuteness and new things with balanced with things that we love and remember about Star Wars. It's just striking just the right place for me. I mean, it's very simple, but I'm liking that a lot. I just feel like it's immersing us in this world. And this episode in particular, as it began and, you know, he comes upon the Jawas tearing apart his ship, I'm like, okay, well, this is a detour and it's really frustrating. And so I hope this episode doesn't feel like a frustrating detour to me, but it didn't at all. I mean, I've watched each one of these four times each now, and I'm totally digging it. And I can't wait for the next one. So I'm loving it.
Why did you feel it was a detour?
Because he went to go to his ship to take Baby Yoda back to collect his bounty, and his ship was being taken apart, and the whole episode was having to deal with that.
Oh, I see, yeah. He had, like, these side quests he had to figure out.
And some people, I could hear them saying, this is filler, but to me, I don't care. I'm not one of those people that, if they're not moving the main plot along, it's failing. I'm more like, I want to be moved, and I want to, you know, be enraptured and engaged, and so that's what I care about the most.
Yeah, I really liked it too, and I liked it for the same reasons. You know, I heard people throwing around things like filler or bottle episode, and I'm like, come on, I don't think you can call an episode all about the titular character as filler or bottle episode. And also, it's only the second one. I mean, we're not that deep into it yet, but it was great. And I liked the fact that it was a bit of a side quest, a bit of a self-contained story. I thought that all worked really, really well. And at the same time, it showed the Mandalorian get beaten down. It gave us a little bit more of his personality. So there was stuff there to keep me interested, definitely. And I think the Jawas are super fun. So I was on board with everything about this episode.
Yeah, me too. I enjoyed the callbacks and the, you know, all from the original Star Wars trilogy. And I really like the Sandcrawler. That was heck of cool to see that again.
Mm-hmm. And see it from the inside or from the driver's seat. I don't know if we ever got to see that before.
Right. Yeah. Now that's, it was really small. I would have never imagined that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Can I go first too on our top three?
Of course. Yeah.
Okay. So my number three is the cuteness of that little baby Yoda, which was overwhelming, like the cutest thing ever, peak cuteness. And I mean, just like, it's like they, you know, just sort of engineered how to make the cutest possible thing, the little peach fuzzy hair. And I think cuteness can involve things that are seem too small combined with things that are too big. So like giant ears and big eyes and a little tiny head and a little chirpy voice and this oversized like smock / Jedi master pajamas or whatever. and the sound, the little baby sounds, I think they actually sampled real babies, and how he tilts his head side to side and his ears go up and down independently of each other. And I just think they nailed it. And I think if you told someone about this who hadn't seen it, they might think, oh, that sounds like Ewoks, you know, it's so lame. And I mean, I always liked the Ewoks, but I kind of understand where people are coming from there. But because cute can easily go wrong. But I think they really got it right with this. Don't you guys agree? Or do you think it was 100%. Too cute?
Is it a puppet?
Yes.
Is it? That was really well done.
It's a well done.
Yeah, I agree too. I'm surprised at how amazingly they've done the cute baby Yoda. But like, you're right when you say it's combining little things with big things. It's the same reason everyone finds puppies so adorable, because they have big paws and little bodies and big floppy ears and big eyes, and that all contrasts with their small size.
And the way they move.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was cute, but he did creep me out a little bit. You know that scene where the Mandalorian was fixing his wound on the rock And then the little baby Yoda came up and was going to, I don't know what he was going to do. And at first I was like, no, Mandalorian, let him do what he's going to do. But then I thought about it and I was like, wait a minute. If I was the Mandalorian in that particular instance, I might be a little creeped out. I don't know how I would react either. I'd be like, nah. All right, I don't know what you're going to do, but back in your crib, buddy.
He was just more like annoyed, like, come on, get out of here. But yeah, Nico, who's my 8-year-old, was like, let him do it. He's going to help. And it very much seemed like what movie? Anybody know what I'm talking
about? Good
question. E.T.
Oh, E.T. Oh, like, E.T., yeah.
Ouch, you know.
Wow.
But yeah, I thought that was super cute. And I liked it. Second time through, I noticed, I didn't quite notice this the first time, but he's following the little frog thing around, and it seemed like he wanted to play with it, and then he grabs it and eats it. He's like, spit that out, and he eats it. I love that. And I liked it in part because it was funny and cute, but also because I just felt glad that he was getting some nourishment.
And that frog thing all happened in sort of the background, right? While other more important things were being discussed. And I thought it was adorable as well. And back at the beginning, when he hops out of the basket twice and comes over, and Mandalorian has to keep putting him back in, it was it was so adorable. And yeah, I'm just surprised that it worked so well.
And I like the relationship between the two. How he baby, I'm going to call him Baby Yoda, even though everybody understands. I'm not saying this is actually Yoda, but he's so compassionate towards the Mandalorian, and he wants to help, and he's watching his struggles and seems to want to help. And so, you know, you have this tough, cool character with a cute, vulnerable little sidekick, and that's pretty irresistible. And and I almost hope, well, man, don't get us too used to this dynamic, because I feel like the Baby Yoda's not going to be around forever. And so the show has to work without him. But I've seen articles and things online saying that Baby Yoda's the best thing about this show.
There's a lot of people after him, that's for sure.
Yeah, he's important. And so, yeah, so we see him use the Force. And so I think, you know, we've talked about how Yoda's species is a bit of a mystery, but it does seem like they're saying the Force is innate in these creatures, because everyone we've known about so far has been a big Force user. And it was interesting that they were surprised by it. I mean, we've seen the Force so much that it seems like old hat to us, but it's been made pretty clear in the Star Wars movies that at this point people aren't used to it and think it's a legend and everything. So, the way that the Mandalorian reacts to it is in awe and amazement and confusion and everything.
Yeah. And I think we're supposed to believe that the Force is actually a pretty rare thing. For people to be able to use in the universe, right? Even though it seems like every character we follow in movies and TV shows can use the Force, but it is nice to see the Mandalorian react in such a way, even at the end when he said, like, I don't understand what happened back there, you know, to
exactly
to what's his name,
Quill or whatever.
Yeah, Quill, I don't know,
maybe it's not really a baby.
Yeah, I mean, I was wondering if at some point he'll start talking, and because I don't really think so at this point, but it would go along with the way Yoda himself was full of surprises. You know how in Empire we didn't know that was actually Yoda. We just thought it was some goofy little creature.
Yeah.
And then he revealed himself to Luke, although a friend of mine spoiled that for me, so I knew it the whole time. But anyway.
Oh, it's the worst.
Was it Corey?
Who was it was my friend Steve Pereira, remember him? He was a football team. Yeah,
throw him under the bus.
You bastard.
I think he's in jail now, so
well, look, I should jump in here with my number three, because I wanted to talk about Baby Yoda too. Although I in my notes here wrote down that we should start calling it the child, for at least for now, until there's a name given, because that's the name of the episode. But you know, do whatever you want. And I was, again, as I said, amazed by how the cuteness worked, but also kind of how this idea of the Mandalorian as babysitter was working okay for me. And if you'd told me that the show was going to be about this ruthless, or apparently ruthless, bounty hunter escorting a baby around, I would have been like, come on, are you really? Is that what they're going to do? But, you know, and it's only been two episodes and really only one with the child in it, but so far it's working really well for me, and I'm excited about that. And then with the Force, like, it's, I'm glad that they introduced it already, but I feel like I still have a lot of questions about it. So, you know, if it really is a baby, does the baby know what it's doing, or is this just more instinctual for it? And why did it take so much energy out of it that it slept after that, like, for a long time? So some questions like that. And then I'm curious about how they're going to incorporate this into the show more. If the baby's going to stick around for a long time, or like you said, will it surprise us somehow and it'll become more of an actual character than just a baby?
Right.
The only thing I worry about a little bit here is that I don't want the child to become a crutch. And what I mean by like that is that, like, every time somebody's in trouble, the kid whips out the Force and saves the day. You know, I don't want that to happen.
Yeah. That's kind of why I think it's good that they showed that that one act took so much out of him. In the same way also that, you know, I'm going to talk a little bit more about this later, but for the Mandalorian to use his big gun, he has to load one bullet at a time. Just it helps these really powerful effects seem limited. And so for the child to use the Force, it will take a lot out of him, so he can't just magically do it whenever it's needed.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Because if it was too easy, then again, the Force sort of becomes, it's like the Superman effect. It's a little too easy sometimes to control every situation. So I'm glad they've built that limitation in.
Yeah, and that's actually what made me wonder if the child is a baby, because I mean, he knew, like you pointed out, Chris, he knew when to use the Force. He knew how to use the Force. Maybe in his species, he's just a smaller, weaker version, you know, instead of a baby.
It's interesting. I mean, he definitely in a lot of ways acted like a baby, the way he was with that frog and making the little coo sounds and the way he never talks. And he seems like an innocent little child. And so I could see that just being some innate thing, you know, little 2 and 3 year olds will reach out to try to help people sometimes. So I could see that. On the other hand, it could just be complicated, like he's an alien. So maybe in some ways he's more wise and intelligent than humans, and other ways less so, you know.
Yeah.
We just don't know
yet. I agree. It's something to look forward to for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Learn more. Well, and if he is actually a very sort of immature version of this species, like, we've never seen even a human child really that uses the Force. I mean, some hints of that in the more recent Star Wars movies, I guess. But, you know, I mean, Luke didn't learn to use the Force until he was an adult, essentially. Yeah. So we've never seen a kid do it and not know what it is, right? Not know what they're doing.
We saw those little Padawans that Anakin slaughtered, but they were just in lightsaber practice.
Yeah, I was thinking of the kid at the end of the last movie it's just the tiniest scene. If you remember, he Force pulls the broom to himself.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
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 Maybe in humans, what are the little things? Midichlorians? Midichlorians?
We said we were never going to mention that. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, I'm just sorry. Maybe they don't have until puberty. It. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. They don't activate.
Yeah.
Do you think that at this point, I mean, the Mandalorian seems to care, you know, he's shaking the little crib and everything, but you could still say that he just wants the child to be alive because he'll make more money.
That's what I was thinking.
I get the feeling he does care. They call it, so that's telling, but, anyway, do you think he's on his way to just deliver this thing to Werner Herzog? And that'll be it.
I don't think so. I think he's slowly realizing he's gotten himself into something way big.
Maybe like, I've got something more valuable than I thought.
Yeah.
Because every bounty hunter in the galaxy is after it.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. I would agree with that. I think he's going to realize this child is more important maybe to the galaxy or even just to him than he knows right now. But I don't think he's just doing it for the money.
Mm-hmm.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ohio seniors, make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. Enroll by December 7th.
Get Rich, what's your number three?
Mine's a little more general. You know, I really like that in the first few shows, at least, that we have the look and feel of the original trilogy. I thought maybe it was just going to be in the first episode, you know, to hook everybody and then maybe, you know, put their own little twist or spin on it like directors like to do so often with movies and ruin them. But not here. I mean, they've stuck with pretty much the original three movies from the 70s and 80s with all the characters and the vehicles and the droids and the setting, you know, and I'm really digging and seeing the characters from the old Star Wars movies in live action. I mean, this is the first time, right, since the movies. So I'm like, I'm completely, like Jason said earlier, I'm totally invested in this series now. We got to get a little up and close with the Jawas, you know, and there's been droids, there's creatures all over the place. It was so cool to see the Sandcrawler in action. I have a little secret. I went out and bought the Lego Sandcrawler because of this episode. Oh, it's so cool. I can't wait to put it together.
So you just bought it like recently. That's awesome.
Yeah, I bought it today. I was trolling around Target and there it was on sale. I was like, no way. I just saw that on TV. I'm going to buy it.
They need to get that little baby Yoda doll out right away because they're going to make bucks.
They must have those in mass production right now. Like, there's no way. They'd be insane not to.
I know.
Plus, they had the other scene, too, where, you know, the whole action sequence with the Sandcrawler was totally cool. And then they had, you know, when the Jawas tried to scrape the Mandalorian off the Sandcrawler by sideswiping that cliff, it kind of had like an Indiana Jones vibe to it. So I was like, oh, that's cool. And the guy, and then at the end, poor Mandalorian works so hard to get to the top, and then he gets zapped.
I love that, because, yeah, it's like all for nothing. And when they zapped him, by the way, it was the same like blue electric zappy effect as when they zapped R2-D2 in Star Wars. And then he froze for a second and then fell over just like the Mandalorian did. So they're really, you know, careful with the details, which is great.
Does either of you guys know what his ship is called? Does it have a name?
Yeah. It's called the Razor Crest.
Razor Crest. Okay. Well, I was going to say that I think, like you were saying, Rich, they have kept the look and feel of the original trilogy. And even though it all looks like more polished, I just mean like, you know, better effects and things like that, it still feels like the same place. You know, it feels like that ship is of the same generation of ones we saw in the original trilogy. And I think they've done a really good job with that.
I'm glad they kept it.
I think actually, I'm not positive about this, but I think the Razor Crest is the same kind of military gunship like the ones used in the prequel trilogy, where they would have all those clone troopers. So it might be just like a leftover one of those. But way it's all grimy now, it looks more like the stuff we saw in the, you know, original trilogy. But I think it's one of those. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's a good call.
Well, it's a cool looking ship in any case. I like it.
Okay, my turn, right? My number two is the f***ing Jawas.
I love Jawas.
Me too. I mean, I love them on one hand from a viewer point of view because they're like little gremlins that stir up and laugh at everyone's misfortune, and that's really fun to watch. But I also imagine myself going out and like going to the mall or something, and I come out to my car and I see these little creatures taking it apart. I'd be like, You guys, my insurance is not going to cover this.
Start vaporizing him.
Oh, I don't have Jawa insurance.
We're not supposed to swear. I'm going to have to beat those out. Anyways, I did think the ship could have used a security system or something. It's pretty vulnerable.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you know, when you, it does seem like he I loved how he's just like, disintegrate you guys, and then chased after him. And I'm like, yeah, it does seem like a big deal that would happen, because we saw how hard he worked just for a shoulder plate. You know, he had to take in like 5 bounties or whatever. And so to lose your whole ship would be a pretty big deal. So it made sense that he chased after him. And I like that they just like to stir things up and mess with people, and you know, made him go through all that for an egg that they were just going to eat.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a little silly. And I also thought it was a little silly that after he killed several of them, that they still would do business with him. But the way I'm reconciling that is not that, because for me, it felt like, oh, the stakes aren't very high if they're going to treat this whole thing like a joke. But instead, I'm just like, and these creatures are just so vile that they don't even care enough for themselves to care if a few of them are disintegrated. And totally. So that's kind of how I thought of it. But one criticism I do have is, I think up until now, unless I'm something I'm that I missed out on, the Jawas have been just native to Tatooine. And so it's a little bit unbelievable that the exact same types of Jawas with the exact same big sandcrawler vehicle would be on this other planet, which Wikipedia says is Arvala 7, by the way. And so, you know, I guess Jon Favreau was probably like, yeah, but it'd be so cool to have the Jawas here, so we'll just do it. And it's fun, and I liked it, but I do hope that once The Mandalorian as a show is established, they'll start exploring some brand new things more than hit our nostalgia buttons by putting things like this in there where they maybe don't belong. I don't know. Maybe I'm being too hard on it, though. Maybe Jawas are just on any like desolate planet where they can try to do their deals and stuff.
I think it goes back to what you said last week, or on our last podcast, you said, that they're doing stuff. They like stuff that's cool. So they're just doing stuff. They're throwing stuff in there that's cool. The action sequences are cool, you know, and I think they're going to keep doing that. And I like it. It is cool. It's hella cool.
I mean, there's a level. I want it to make sense, too, though. And it's on the borderline for me.
Sure. I know what you mean about the Jawas. What are they doing there? But they're kind of easing us in, right? And I think they will expand it and bring more planets or more locations and more aliens into it as we move along. I didn't really think about that when I saw the Jawas, but you're right. It is exactly the same pretty much as what we saw on Tatooine. But I'm a sucker for nostalgia, I think, because all this stuff seems to really work on me pretty well. So it didn't even occur to me, but I can see your point.
I mean, I was super critical of Force Awakens. I mean, there were things about Force Awakens that I loved, but what I was critical about was that this new, the First Order just looks like the Empire. And I just feel like sometimes J.J. Abrams will have stuff, will just push our nostalgia buttons in ways that don't make sense for the story. But anyway, I mean, you could easily just say, oh, no, the Jawas are on different planets, so shut up.
Right.
So that's fine. One other thing about the Jawas. So no one seems to know what's under the Jawa robes. According to Wikipedia, rumors say giant rodents or devolved humans, but we don't know for sure. But my son, Bodhi, who's 2 years old and who is behind in talking from where his brother Nico was at that age, he has this gibberish that I always thought sounded kind of alien and weird and interesting. and while we were watching this episode, Bodhi started saying, yeah, suga, suga. And I'm like, oh, you're a Jawa. Oh. Now we know what's under the robes. So I have a little bit of him recorded. This isn't as alien as he can sound sometimes, but I'm going to just play a little bit of his speech here.
Okay, what do you want to say?
I know, don't eat it.
That's it.
You may be onto
something. That would explain a lot, especially how he reverse engineers everything.
He does
in your
take
house.
Apart everything.
He's a little scavenger who has his own language. So there you go.
That's right. He likes to dump stuff out. He's totally a Jawa.
It's amazing.
He's going to start trading you, huh?
He's going to start
trade.
Yeah, stealing my stuff and selling it back to me. All right, where are we? Number one. Number two.
I'm going to do number two now. Yeah. And just before I do, I wanted to say that I was surprised at how devastating the Mandalorian's main weapon was. I did not expect people to just disintegrate when he shot them. That seemed really, really harsh. And, you know, with blasters, people get hit all the time and they just fall down. They have a burn mark on them. But this guy's disintegrating people. So I was kind of surprised when I saw him take out Jawas like that.
I know, and it's dual function too, right? Because didn't he zap one first and then disintegrate one?
Well,
first in the beginning when he was fighting the other bounty hunters.
Yeah, so these bounty hunters are like Bossk, who is one of the bounty hunters that was with him in Empire, and they're called Trandoshans, and he disintegrated one of those as it was bearing down on the child, which was so cool. But here's the thing, is when Darth Vader was giving instructions to Boba Fett and all those other bounty hunters, he said, there will be a substantial reward for the one who finds the Millennium Falcon. You are free to use any methods necessary, but I want them alive. No disintegrations. So I think that's where they got the idea to do this.
Okay.
Cool.
Well, all right. So disintegration is a thing. All right. Well, my actual number two is the music. I think that the music on this show is phenomenal. I was listening to the whole soundtrack from it earlier today, and it's of course much more involved than the bits you hear on the actual show. But it's written by or composed by a guy named Ludwig Göransson, who I think is an Academy Award winning composer. And I think he's just done an amazing job. I feel like there's a tiny bit of John Williams influence in there, just enough to tie it to sort of the traditional Star Wars music, but it also sounds entirely unique. And it's this amazing mix of spaghetti Western and science fiction. Sometimes it feels really gritty when it needs to, but it starts with those like pan flutes or whatever they are, sort of almost like woodwind things. Yeah. And you know, it really fits the vibe of the show, I think. So I really love the music. I loved it when the Mandalorian like steps through a door or any sort of entrance, we get the opening notes of his kind of theme song. And you know, that old stereotypical like Western music where it's like that kind of stuff.
It's kind of evocative of that.
It's like the science fiction version of that. And
it's very good.
It's so good.
And it's kind of minimal and spare, like the environments and the plot and a lot of things about this show too.
It is, but it also really ramps up when it needs to. Yeah. And if you go and listen to the full versions of these songs or this score, there are parts of it that is really big and intense. And I think we'll hear more of it as the show goes on, but so far I'm loving the soundtrack for this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like when he takes off in his ship to leave the planet, it just went into a giant fanfare and I was like, whoa, yeah, it's totally like, John Williams, you know?
Yeah. That moment has a lot of horns and stuff in it, which John Williams did a lot of, you know, but it blends in perfectly. And I'm really happy that I like the music so much, because the sort of alternate take they did on the Star Wars music for Rogue One didn't really capture me that much. And that was one of the things maybe it was fine, but it didn't really do it for me. But here it stands out as exceptional. So
I agree. And I really like that movie, but yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I'm glad they're not throwing in pop music.
Yeah, totally.
Top 40 soundtrack or something, right?
No, this
we
is
do not,
yeah, perfect.
We do not want any Justin Bieber on this show.
Oh my gosh.
And that's almost as bad as midichlorians. And Richard and I used to be in marching band together, and our band director, Mr. Gilroy, would talk about dynamics, how if you have the softer softs, then it makes the louder louds stand out more. And I think that applies here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
100%.
Rich?
My number two was the pacing and the situational humor. I know we already covered this a little bit, but I'm really digging the pacing, man. The story, you know, I'm afraid that the audience is going to get upset that the story isn't moving very quickly because people, you know, they just want boom, boom, boom. That's how, you know, everyone has the attention span of a gnat nowadays. But it's moving quick enough. You know, there's parts where you just get to watch the Mandalorian. You just get to watch him do his thing and guess as to what he's thinking or what he's doing.
They take their time with it. It makes you feel like they're really confident about it, right? Or that's how it goes with me anyway. Like, yeah, they're not rushing it.
No. And then just when you're like, okay, there needs to be something that happens. There's something that happens, you know, you get some kick-ass action to remind us that the Mandalorian is in fact a badass and he's living in a difficult situation in a universe where you got to be resourceful and take care of yourself. And so all of this together, even though it's not moving super quick, is, you know, slowly, like Chris said earlier, giving us a little insight into who the Mandalorian is and his personality and, you know, his behavior, the fun. And then you got the fun and the humor in this episode. You know, it wasn't so much directed at the audience, you know, through the, you know, directly. It was more from watching the Mandalorian deal with these ridiculous punishing tasks that he had to do, all while this tiny 50-year-old baby was following him around in this floating crib. That cracked me up.
So do you think the little pod, I think it was just kind of set to follow him. I don't think that was anything the child was doing.
No,
it's
like,
I was wondering about that too, but I think, you know, the Mandalorian, when he went in to fight the, or when the big rhino thing was going to attack the crib, he like did something on his wrist.
Yeah, he can control it manually when he needs to. But like when he was running after the sandcrawler, I think it just automatically followed him.
Yeah, it's like you can buy drones these days that will connect to your phone and it'll follow you around if you're like going down a ski hill or something like that. But you're right. I thought it was really cool when he'd like punch a button on his wrist and then wave his arm and the thing would go the direction. Like that was really neat, I thought.
Yeah. I want the stuff that makes stuff float. That would be awesome.
Yeah, the levitation technology would be great, I think.
Oh, man, that would be totally cool.
Never have to move a couch up a staircase again. That would be awesome.
All right, I trade. I don't want the lightsaber anymore. I want the stuff that makes stuff float.
Good call.
Okay, my number one is about references and lore, which we've talked a lot about and covered a lot of them, so I'll just mention the ones that we haven't. So this guy Kweel, who is the guy that helps the Mandalorian a lot and voiced by Nick Nolte, they haven't said his name on screen, so we're just going by what we've read, so that's why I'm saying Kweel, but I'm not sure. He's an Ugnaught, who is the same species as the creatures in Cloud City in Empire that dismantled C-3PO.
A what?
Right, yep.
What's he called?
Ugnaught. That's the type of creature he is. They look
Ugnaught.
Like
Ugnaught.
Yeah. So they in Empire, remember when they took C-3PO apart and Chewbacca had to save him and put him back together?
Right. Yeah.
The Jawas. One of the Jawas said "Utini," which is something that they say a few times over the course of the series. I think it means "dude."
Probably, that sounds about right.
What up?
Kweel said of the Jawas, "They really don't like you," to the Mandalorian. That just seemed really Star Warsy to me, because it reminded me of the cantina scene when he doesn't like you and I don't like you either.
Yeah.
When the Mandalorian points his gun at the big rhino creature, which is apparently called a Mudhorn, and it doesn't work, it reminds me of like when Han can't get the Millennium Falcon to go into hyperdrive. Like, technology often fails people at the worst times in these stories.
Yeah, we just experienced that at the beginning of this show.
Right. We finally got it working. Punch it. Richard's microphone wasn't working, by the way. And by the way, that gun, that forked rifle looking gun, is the same, looks like the same kind of gun that Boba Fett used in that Star Wars holiday special. So another connection to the holiday special, and it's called an Amben Phase Pulse Blaster.
Oh,
and
wow.
It disintegrates things. And let's see, a couple more sort of callbacks, just pretty obvious one, but the Jawas trading the Mandalorian stuff back to him just reminded me of when Luke and Uncle Owen went to the Jawas and bought C-3PO and R2-D2, who they had just found and captured. So that's what they do. They find stuff or steal stuff and then sell it. And then the Jawas eating the egg gave me a little bit of the similar feeling like when Luke was milking that creature in The Last Jedi. It's kind of gross. Not quite as gross, but...
It was a bit gross. That's the only scene in this that kind of got to me a little bit. I'm like, okay, they just wanted to eat it? That's it? And it just kind of looked like a big furry, like, Cadbury cream egg or something.
I know.
Yellow goop in it. I don't know.
I mean,
simple pleasures, man.
Yeah. The way that I made that work for me is just by saying, oh, these guys are just despicable.
Right. And just really simple creatures, I guess. You know, all they do is steal stuff and resell it and eat Cadbury cream eggs.
And then just the last one that I thought of was when the child was using the force to lift the big rhino creature. It reminded me of when Yoda used the force to lift the X-Wing on Dagobah.
Right.
Holding out his arm like that. And then there's been other times when people have used the force the same way. Okay. Chris.
Well, I guess my number one is just the two. I felt this was a really good episode that was well-balanced, and we got two big main kind of set pieces. The first one was the Mandalorian trying to catch up and infiltrate the Sandcrawler, which we've talked about a little bit, but I thought it was a really fun scene. And the way he's climbing up the side was awesome. I thought everything looked amazing too. Like, I really believed he was hanging off the side of some giant vehicle. So that was fun. And then the other one was fighting the Mudhorn at the end, which was also a great scene. And it occurred to me, must have, or maybe it was just miserable to shoot because he was just so covered in mud and down all the time. And, you know, it looked really sort of real and, I don't know.
Miserable for him.
Miserable. Yeah, exactly.
It's so fun to see him get the crap beat out of him. I don't know why.
It is. And so I was thinking about it. And, you know, the first one, it's kind of man versus machine a little bit because he's trying to get into this big sand crawler. And then against the Mudhorn, it's like man versus monster or whatever. I don't know if that's a thing, but that's what was happening.
You could say man versus nature, I guess.
I guess versus nature, yeah. But then when you think about it, he kind of loses both fights too, right? But but he still completes his mission, you know? Right. He gets zapped off the Sandcrawler, and then he can't defeat the Mudhorn without the help of the Force.
Yeah.
Yet he still completes his mission. So that's the kind of character he is. Even when, you know, he's at his worst, he makes things work. And he's lucky, yeah.
I mean, this is the second time in two episodes that he's had a Deus Ex Machina, because when those... whatever creatures that he ended up riding attacked him in the first episode and almost chewed off his arm, it was the Queel guy who came and shot them with trank darts. And
That's right.
Here it's Baby Yoda that saves him. And I feel like they need to be careful with this character because he is so cool and such a badass that if he seems too capable from the beginning, he's got no place to go. So maybe that's kind of what this is. Like, he doesn't have his signet yet. I think his ship is cool, but I think he's, by the end of this, he'll have a much cooler ship and he'll have more Beskar steel plated armor all over him. So they're trying to give him room to grow into an even cooler character, I think.
I think that's a really good point. I hope he doesn't end up with something the same as the Slave One, though, because that is really a Boba Fett ship to me.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah, yeah.
But you're right. He does need somewhere to go. But I just like how he's already obviously pretty capable, yet he's needed help, and he's kind of lost both these fights. And that's what I was getting at earlier with the baby using the force to save the day. I don't want that to happen all the time, but you're right, Jason, when you said that it took so much out of the kid that's probably their way of managing that a bit. So, but anyways, two good fights that I really, really enjoyed. And, that doesn't even count the first one against the Bossk looking guys, which was also a pretty good hand to hand battle on its own, you know?
Totally. Yeah. He's good at kicking ass against, two arms and two legs. Not so good with with That's big right. animals.
Yeah, because in the very first scene in that bar, he was totally in command. You know, the first episode.
He was, yeah, that's right. What did you guys think of the Mudhorn? I'd never seen this creature before. In fact, I don't even know if it existed in Star Wars before this show, but I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was really excited when I saw the size of the hole. I was like, oh, yeah, it's going to be big.
It's going to be big.
And the way they did it where he's in this muddy cave shining his helmet light against what looks like the muddy wall of the cave, and then the eye opens, and then you cut to the outside and you just see some blaster shots, and then you see him flying out. That was really cool. And you're waiting to see what comes out of it. But as the battle was happening, I had the thought, you know, that poor thing is just, maybe it's a mother protecting its her egg.
Right. I was kind of hoping that like something like he was just going to steal the egg. I mean, I knew there was going to be a conflict, but I was hoping he would just be able to get away with the egg without killing the creature, but he did.
No.
Speaking of killing it, though, after the baby passed out and released the force hold on it, the Mandalorian just stabs it once with a tiny little knife, and that killed it. So I'm I'm not sure why that was so easy at that point.
Right. I was thinking the same thing.
On Walking Dead cast, we have this thing called the Department of Suspension of Disbelief, and that would definitely belong here.
Okay, fair enough. He got it just in the right spot, in a big vein that it killed it.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Jenny instant said kill. A nerve cluster or something.
There you go.
Rich?
All right. My number one highlight is the possibility with the storylines. I'm really digging this show, and I can't wait with what they've set up in this second episode, what's going to happen next. I mean, you know, in the beginning, like we just talked about, he's fighting those three bounty hunters that came with the tracker. I mean, who's sending all these bounty hunters, right? Are they coming from different places in the galaxy? Is it the same guy sending out a whole bunch of different bounty hunters? You know, what's the child's part in all this? Are there going to be Jedis that show up? Is there going to be cloning that happens? Are we going to see the beginnings of the First Order?
We talked about it last week a little bit, and I do hope, we learn more about the First Order, because the First Order doesn't totally make sense to me now.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beatyourprice. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beatyourprice.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right. Notes? Oh, well, I guess I'll go. So another couple of entries into the Department of Suspension of Disbelief. Why did the Mandalorian need the Blurg to get to the Yoda baby but could then just walk out?
Yep, good question.
this moisture farmer Queel knows how to fix a starship. I felt like I was watching Fear the Walking Dead a little bit there.
Oh, don't say that. It was way less annoying than Fear the Walking Dead.
That's it. Other than the little point, little like 3-inch knife killing this big rhino. Those were the only things that got to
me. I think the only other note I had is that I liked how the cockpit of the Sandcrawler was short and sort of Jawa height, which I never thought about before because they're usually the only ones in there. And then. Yeah. Mando had to duck, and he banged his head when they went over a bump. I like that.
And they all laughed.
Yeah, that was good. That's a little detail thing, right, mm-hmm. that I appreciate on shows like this.
Totally.
Bunch of little assholes.
I had more. I have more notes. Just not, like, things that I'm complaining about. I like some cool stylistic things. The beeping of the tracking device in the beginning resolves into the opening music, like this pulsing.
Right. Beep, beep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that.
And just the shots are framed really well in this. It's very cinematic. And I liked, especially in this episode, there were a few where there's just this one lone guy in the distance central to the frame in this big expansive backdrop with a little orb to the side of him. It just looks cool. And I think it's shot in widescreen because on my TV there's black bars on the top or bottom, so it's like they made it for the theater even though it's not shown in the theater.
But oh, is that right?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, I have the same experience. It's definitely widescreen, but it looks great. Like I think the shot you're talking about is one where it's a really wide shot with sort of two hills on the side and he comes up the center right in front of the sun. It was really cinematic and really beautiful.
Yeah, that was cool. You know, there were a couple of instances. I said earlier that most of the humor in here was situational, but he did have a couple of lines. The one line where he said just before he was sitting down to negotiate with the Jawas, they were saying, put down your weapons. And he said, I'm a Mandalorian. Weapons are part of my religion. That gave me a little bit of a giggle.
Yeah. And then he puts them down anyway.
He's like, you understand this?
Yeah.
This flamethrower.
And he's shooting freaking flames at him. And then they're like still dealing with him.
They're like, whoa, calm down, dude.
I mean, he's shown in this episode, as much as we might wonder if he's just a good guy, if you steal from him, he will kill you. There's that. When he was walking up the side of the sandcrawler holding on to his cable, that seemed very 1966 Batman.
Yeah.
Reminded me of that.
I like when he uses the cable. That's cool.
Yeah. And then I read, that's, all of his accoutrements are a reaction to the Jedi. They're like, well, the Jedi can reach out and pull things towards them with the Force. So they came up with these cables.
Right.
You mentioned the humor. I thought it was really funny when he comes up, he goes back to Quill, and Quill, the first thing he says is, I thought you were dead. I'm like, man, I thought you had a lot of confidence in him, but I guess maybe not as much as you said. And then as far as he's concerned, I thought for a second there that he was going to be a regular, that he was going to be his co-pilot or something, because he asked him. But that just shows that the Mandalorian is open to not being a loner. And so I bet you he'll pick up some crew members sometime in the future.
Oh, yeah.
I bet we will.
The lady, right?
Yeah. Gina Carano.
The lady we keep seeing in the posters, yeah.
She used to be a UFC fighter.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. And when Karen and I, early on in Walking Dead cast, chose the five people that we'd want to be with us in the zombie apocalypse, she was one of my picks.
That's a pretty good choice.
Right on.
So, and then the last note I had is just that I've been watching this with Nico and he's into it. And I thought about it. I'm like, hey, this might actually be the first show that Nico and I are both into together and that we'll watch together week to week. And I love that.
That's cool. Nice.
Yeah.
Cool.
Have you shown your daughters?
I'm trying to get my daughters to watch it with me, but they're just like, we're just going to listen to your podcast. We don't have to watch it. What?
Oh, come on.
No, that's not how it works.
No. Do that with Fear the Walking Dead, but not.
Yeah.
All right, that's cool. This episode, we got the news left and listener feedback, but this felt more like an episode that we used to do covering Ash vs. Evil Dead, because we unabashedly liked that show, and we've liked this one too.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool.
That's very fun, very fun.
Okay, we'll take a little break. There is more to come. Stay with us. Back, it's time for some news. The news is about the child, the baby Yoda. The guy who played the client last week, Werner Herzog, he's an Oscar nominated actor, and he described baby Yoda as heartbreakingly beautiful. He says, on the set, it looked absolutely convincing. It made you cry when you saw it. I saw two technicians operating it remotely. One was for the eyes and the mouth, and the other was for other facial expressions. It's a phenomenal technical achievement, and beyond the technological achievement, it's heartbreaking. Star Wars newcomer Emily Swallow, who played the armorer, the like blacksmith character, said, "I just wanted to nuzzle him on set." And Omid Abtahi, who played Dr. Pershing, said, "I was in love." And he put it on his shoulder. And Jon Favreau talked about the character. He said, "As fun as it is to reveal new characters and surprise and be surprising, it also fits into a larger narrative about what's going on in the galaxy after the revolution. This is an important character. What I'm most proud of is we surprise people. Do you know how hard it is to do that nowadays, and what type of commitment it took from everybody who was on set and from the studio to hide all the clues, especially Star Wars fans who tap into looking into toy catalogs, looking into marketing materials, looking into style guides, photography. The fact that the secret was kept is incredible."
Cool.
And then they talk about, you know, doing it as practical effects versus CG. He says, "I think with Star Wars, there's an acceptance of a certain look, and so I'm taking chances here that I wouldn't take on a film that wasn't this, but because the fans are already invested in those technologies." And then we used a lot of really cutting-edge technologies using game engine rendering, and real-time rendering video wall set extension, using a lot of the technology that we developed around Lion King and Jungle Book, both of which he directed recently.
Well, they did a hell of a job. I mean, I didn't even know it was a puppet.
I know. I mean, when he's talking about that, I'm thinking about this. What was that other little annoying laughing thing from last week?
The monkey thing.
Yeah. I forget its name now.
Like, that's the kind of thing I think he's saying if it was another movie he wouldn't have done. And so, yeah, it kind of takes you out of it if you're, you know, thinking about more modern techniques. But the baby Yoda, I think, yeah, looked great.
It looks amazing. Like, I assumed it was probably more digital than it was, like, traditional, or what do you call that?
Maybe it was a combination.
Well, I assumed it was a combination, but I just for some reason thought more digital. But it sounds like they actually made a remote control, like, robotic baby Yoda, which is amazing.
Yeah.
It looked incredible.
Yeah. And then Carl Weathers says about baby Yoda, "It's one of those things that if you have kids come Christmas, you may wind up with a little toy. I don't think that's going to be forgotten or missed by anyone who is into promoting."
Ah, there we go.
Yeah. That's the other part of Star Wars, is the merchandising. Billions.
Right. Big time. And then lastly, yeah, because I think George Lucas, for the original Star Wars, he gave up some front end cost in exchange for merchandising rights, and people were like, "Yeah, sure, you're crazy."
Right.
Lastly, Jon Favreau just mentioned somewhere, I didn't write it down, but anyway, he says, "We're done with the first season. I'm actually writing part of the second season now. I'm having a blast. It's like turning over your toy chest and playing with all the Star Wars toys together. We're having a great time." So they're working on season two. I guess that's already a given that it's going to have a season two.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
I'm not too surprised that they're just going to make at least two. Even before this one started, they were probably going, "You know what? We can do whatever we want, so we'll do at least two of these."
Yeah, and I think, I mean, it seems to be getting a really good reception online, and Disney Plus seems to be a big success, so it seems like everything's going pretty good for it.
Yep, they're not hurting.
It's totally hard to see where it's going to go. Things change so fast nowadays. What if this series lasts for 13 years?
I feel like Jon Favreau would not want to do something that long.
Probably want to go out on top, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah,
have
and
some
just
restraint, do the best he can and go out on top. You're right.
And two, he's a in-demand director, you know, so he if he spent too long on one thing, he might feel like that was taking away from other opportunities. So I would say, I don't know, man, I guess it's too early to tell after two episodes, but I'd be happy if we had a five season run.
That'd be great. Yeah. That'd be great.
That would be cool.
Okay. And we still have I haven't mentioned this yet, but they're also planning a series with the main character, the I forget his name, but the guy in Rogue One. Cassian.
Oh, really?
The pilot?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Like, obviously, it would be a prequel.
Yeah.
Won't say why.
He was pretty charismatic. I could see that working.
Yeah.
And no shortage of Star Wars content, I guess.
Right. Okay, let's get in some listener feedback.
Sure. First one comes from Mandy Castillo, or Castillo. Ridiculously adorable. That little baby eating the frog thing against the Mandalorian's directions was the cutest darn thing. Apart from that, this series already has that realism against the fantasy backdrop that I loved about Rogue One and The Force Awakens. I can't wait to see what comes next.
Yeah. Alex Balish writes, "This series is the best of Star Wars, I believe. Why? Because after the show, Clone Wars and Rebels being so good and detailed, it makes more sense to have live-action series than movies. Dave Filoni is the real genius behind the whole series and has taken George Lucas's vision to the next level. That said, I love both episodes so far. They are as gritty as Rogue One, which is one of my favorite movies, and bring back much of what we love about A New Hope. Not to mention a baby Yoda who has powers. The dilemmas that the Mandalorian gets into are both funny and suspenseful. I loved when the Jawas were throwing garbage at him to fight him off, and when he gets the hairy egg and all they wanted to do was eat it. This whole show reminds me of my books, waiting to see what happens next. Plus, did you check out the credits with the artwork? Can't wait to hear your take. I have spoken."
Yeah, we didn't mention that, but the artwork just looks super cool. Classic.
Yeah. I love those, like, they look like paintings in the end credits of scenes that we just watched in the episode. I think it's really a nice touch.
Yeah, it's really cool. Like, they look like covers of the novels or things that have popped up over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Alicia Stout says, "Get yourself a friend who looks at you the way Baby Yoda looks at the Mandalorian. Oh, my heart." "But honestly, who, or should I say how, was his little pod being controlled while the Mandalorian was attacking that Jawa ship? It's like a drone. I was very concerned, LOL. Baby Yoda is so dang cute, and nothing better happened to that little guy or we riot. This episode felt more humanized, and I'm loving the theme. Can't wait to hear the podcast. Pod-cast.
If the Baby Yoda dies, we riot. We're back on that."
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, Damian Vitale writes, "I could watch a show just with the Baby Yoda floating around in his bed and using the Force. Frickin' adorable. Overall, it was a good episode with lots of action. Hope we see Nick Nolte's character in the future. I have spoken."
Wow. That's the tagline for this series now, huh?
That may become spoken. A thing, I have a feeling, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I'm going to start using that and see if it works.
Right.
I'm going to try it at work. Next time I'm sitting in a meeting and I want to get it to end, I'm just going to say, "I have spoken," and then walk out. Yeah. That'd be great.
Yeah, anytime anyone's looking at you like, but what about, that's when you say it.
Yeah, I have spoken.
It's like saying, "It's settled then."
Right. Period.
All right. Elizabeth Nikolaevich says, "They've got Baby Yoda's reaction to his observations of events down to a T. Just watching as he observes is one of the most entertaining parts of The Mandalorian. And he swallows that frog-like creature, or just a frog, like a champ. And the Mandalorian thinks he's just a child putting something inappropriate in its mouth. The subtle humor is great."
Yeah, he eats the thing live and just swallows it down in one gulp. It's pretty funny.
Robert Parker says, "Finally, we get some payback from those Jawas stealing our droids. Also, finally, we get some disintegration."
Ooh, the more disintegration, the better. Yeah. Mark McBurney writes, "A solid episode, in my opinion. Love all the little callbacks that they do, especially to the Knights of the Old Republic game, like Baby Yoda going to force heal the Mandalorian or having to venture into a cave to retrieve an egg. A little disappointed it wasn't a crate dragon, though."
Ah, force heal. Okay.
Yeah, force healing is a thing, which I assume is what the baby was trying to do, but that doesn't really line up with the baby kind of just instinctually using the force, because it seemed to know what it was doing at that point.
Right.
I think that's what he was trying to do.
Well, probably.
I think the crate dragon is the creature
that Obi-Wan Kenobi was mimicking on Tatooine when he made a fearsome sound that scared the sand, what are they called? The sand people? Yeah, the sand people away.
Yeah.
I think that's what that is, but I'm not positive.
Oh, cool.
Paik Allen says, I get why Vader said... Oh, sorry, guys. Got a frog in my throat, speaking of Yoda. Paik Allen says, I get why Vader said no disintegrations to Boba Fett now. That weapon is brutal. And holy wow with the child. Calling it Baby Yoda bothers me for some reason because it's not Yoda, but we don't have any other name to call it, or even species to call it. So having some really strong force powers already, that was insane. The episode was a little more of the goofy and silly side. However, I still fully enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like Paik, if there was a little baby red-haired guy with a little beard, we would call him Baby Paik.
Of course. Why not?
Casey Robertson says, this last episode made up for the clunky first episode. My only regret was the use of the Force, only because I was under the impression this was a Jedi/Force-free series. Still, I can't wait till next Friday. And yes, I have spoken.
Somebody else who has spoken. Funny. Bianx Vargas wrote, Baby Yoda, and then three emojis, which you guys emojis. Can describe if you want.
The one looks afraid, then heart eyes, and then anxious.
Yeah, that's about it. Baby Yoda.
Vox Wraith writes, you guys mentioned that Boba might be in the background in the tribe hall, and it's been lingering around the Star Wars pages that it likely isn't Boba. The color palette isn't quite right. Also, he does survive the Sarlacc, covered in the novel A Barv Like That, A Tale of Boba Fett. He ignites his jetpack from inside the beast and kills the Sarlacc, and then climbs out, spoiler, where Dengar finds him and helps to nurse him back to health after the pit's acid destroys his armor and severely burns his body. The extent at which is briefly seen, I believe it's been a while, in the comic Twin Engines of Destruction.
Wow.
So this brings to mind to me that when Disney bought Lucasfilm from and all, everything Star Wars from George Lucas in a few years back, they put out this statement that everything from the Star Wars extended universe is now called Star Wars Legends, and it's no longer considered canon. So what's considered canon now, which is, you know, canon means what officially happened along with in Star Wars, is all the movies, episodes 1 through 8 now, you know, Phantom Menace chronologically through, you know, all the movies, and including the Clone Wars movie. All the novelizations of the movies are canon, except any places where something in a movie novel is different from what happened in the movie than the way it is in the movie is the official canon. The Clone Wars television show is canon. And then any Star Wars material that's been released after when they made that announcement, which was April 25th, 2014, is canon, unless explicitly dubbed Legends, which is what they call the non-canon stuff. So all the comics and novels and everything that's come out since then is considered canon. Now, everything before that is legend, so it's not considered official, but I think they've been bringing a lot of the stuff that, you know, happened before into canon. Like, for example, the whole gems inside the lightsabers was extended universe stuff. So when Disney bought Lucasfilm, that became non-canon, but then they put it in a movie, so now it's canon again. So all that is just to say that Boba Fett surviving is as of yet not considered official, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's not, you know, couldn't be brought back in at some point in the future.
Unless that actually was Boba Fett in the tribe hall.
Yeah.
Now he could have survived. Yeah. I read a quick article about that earlier today, and the idea is the color palette of like the helmet that you can see is very, very similar to Boba. I know Vox says it's not quite right, but I mean, time has passed, so it could easily be him. But they're of course not saying, and I don't know if they will right away anyways, but right. It could be. And I kind of hope it is, to be honest with you. I don't know. I just like the idea of Boba Fett surviving and being out there somewhere doing his thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do too.
Me too. And it could have just been a throwaway thing, or it could have been a hint at something to come in the future.
Yep.
We don't know. And we have one call this week. It's from Steve Brown.
Hey guys, it's Steve, and this is for chapter 2 of The Mandalorian, The Child. Really, really liked it. I had to keep reminding myself that this is on Disney, this is PG, so it's not going to be heavy, you know, super violent, but I did love the line, I'm a Mandalorian, weapons are my religion. Thought that was really, really cool. Like that we got to see Nick Nolte again, and the mystery surrounding this child has, it's intriguing, and I'm excited to see who else is going to come after the child. I love that we're getting a little bit of Force action without them actually saying that it's the Force. And I worried a little bit at the end when he looked back at the cradle or whatever that thing was that was holding the child, and all you saw was blankets there, and he shook it and nothing moved. I was almost worried that the Nick Nolte character had like kidnapped it or something. But of course, then he pulls the blanket down and we see the child is there sleeping. And then right at the very end, the child wakes up. So that was really cool to see. And I love watching. Do you watch the end credits with those stills that they show that I thought were really great? And so I just can't wait to hear what you guys thought of chapter 2. I hope you liked it as much as I did. I really am enjoying it. And like I said earlier, just remember, it is a Disney show. It's not on Hulu. It's not on Netflix. It's not rated R. It's not even rated PG-13. It's rated PG. So anyway, talk to you later.
Yeah, I think it's just the right tone. I mean, it's pretty freaking violent, but still feels like a Disney thing. You know, like I said, I'm watching it with my kids. So,
you know what would have been really shocking that just occurred to me, guys? When Steve was talking about how right at the end when he's in the ship and he reaches back to the cradle with the baby in it and nothing moves at first. Imagine if, you know how when Jedis die, they disappear, but their clothes remain.
Yeah.
Like when Obi-Wan gets struck down, his robes fall to the ground. Imagine if that thing had suddenly been empty just the baby's like clothing was still there.
That would have been a bummer.
That would have been. Yeah. But, I would have blown my mind.
They're like, okay, I'm done with this show.
Yeah.
You know what I liked? That he, you know, you were a little afraid for him because he was asleep and he had to keep shaking him. And is he breathing? Yeah, he's breathing. Okay.
Yeah.
And then, but he just woke up at the end. And I just think it takes a show that has confidence in itself not to have it. It didn't even really end on a cliffhanger. I mean, we do wonder where he's taking, you know, the kid, but they could have really just left it like, oh, I wonder what's going to happen to him. And they didn't. And yeah. I like that. It's not gimmicky. I mean, the character of the Mandalorian and even the child are mysterious, but it's part of, it's innate in their characters because the Mandalorian is a Mandalorian, and they never take off their helmets and they don't speak much. So you don't know that much about them, and that's innate to the character. But I think a lot of storytellers put in mystery where it doesn't quite make sense just to try to hook you into keeping watching. In this case, they only do it where it feels organic to the story and otherwise not. And I just really respect that.
Yeah, this whole series has more of a flavor from like the 80s or 90s where,
yeah, more straightforward.
Unlike today, you got these shows where every episode's a super cliffhanger with melodramatic, you know, decisions, mm-hmm. or poor decisions being made just to further the drama. And it's like, hey, this one's just kind of going around, you know, it's just cruising along. And it's been a fun ride.
It's refreshing. Yeah. I mean, that stuff can work really well, but I'm glad they
can, but really good and confident writing doesn't need it. And so far we haven't had it here, and that's a good sign.
Okay. What's coming up next week?
Next week, right now it's titled Chapter 3, don't know what the actual title is going to be, but the tagline is, "The battered Mandalorian returns to his client for his reward." And it's directed by Deborah Chow, written by Jon Favreau.
Oh, well that kind of answers my question. Where he's going.
Yeah. Now we know where he's going.
Yeah. I assume. So something's going to complicate that. I mean, what if he just went back and gave it to him, they gave him all the money, and then went on to the next thing? That would be pretty anticlimactic.
I'm sure something will happen on the way.
Yeah. All right, that is our show. Thanks for listening, everybody. Hope you guys are enjoying it. If you want to write into us or record a voice message and send it in, you can send that to us at groovy@podcastica.com. That's groovy at podcastica.com.
And check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/housepodcastica.
And of course, we're also on Twitter and Instagram at House Podcastica.
And you can check out Chris talking about The Walking Dead at talkingdeadpodcast.com. And you can hear me talking about The Walking Dead at podcastica.com. All right, that is our show.
Thanks for listening.
We have spoken.
Ohio seniors, it's time to make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Plans start at $0 per month and include $0 doctor visits and $0 generic prescription drugs. Visit medmutual.com/review or call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. MedMutual Advantage plans are HMO, HMO POS, and PPO plans offered by Medical Mutual of Ohio with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in a MedMutual Advantage plan depends on contract renewal.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.